The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
Today, we present an episode of my choosing, The Coffin in Studio B from Lights Out.
Lights Out was created by writer Willis Cooper in 1934 and quickly gained a reputation as the goriest, most shocking program on radio. When Cooper left the series to pursue a career in Hollywood, NBC hired writer-director Arch Obler to take his place.
Over the next 2.5 years, Obler wrote more than 100 plays for the series, establishing himself as one of radio's leading voices. Like Cooper, Obler's success with Lights Out led him to leave the program in pursuit of other opportunities. Unlike Cooper, Obler returned to Lights Out many times during his career, usually when he needed a quick buck. This is fortunate for fans today because most of the surviving copies of Lights Out come from these short-lived revival series from the mid to late 1940s.
These later iterations of Lights Out also resurrected a number of Willis Cooper's early scripts for the program, including the play you're about to hear. Sadly, none of the original productions from Cooper's era of Lights Out are known to exist today.
The title, The Coffin in Studio B, is a nod to the real-life Studio B located at Station WENR in Chicago, where Lights Out was originally broadcast, and is only one of many references to the early days of the program.
And now let's listen to The Coffin in Studio B from Lights Out, broadcast July 13th, 1946, as part of a revival series focused on classic Willis Cooper scripts first aired sometime in the mid-1930s.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker, listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
Lights out, everybody. This is the witching hour. It is the hour when dogs howl and evil is let loose on the sleeping world. Want to hear about it? Then turn out your lights.
The National Broadcasting Company brings you Lights Out, a revival of the 8 best stories in the series which many of our listeners will remember. Willis Cooper is your author, and Albert Cruz, your director. Sit in the dark now and listen to
Lights Out.
And what will you do if I won't?
Something very unpleasant, my dear chap.
For example?
For example, it is quite possible that I will kill you.
You amaze me.
No, I assure you I'm quite serious.
It's impossible.
Not impossible at all.
May I ask just how you propose to end my life, shall I say?
I shall cut your throat. Neatly, and as the books have it. With dispatch.
You've been reading books, then?
We're wasting time. What's the answer?
The answer is the same as it has always been.
You refuse, then?
I refuse, yes.
Very well. You force me to become a murderer.
Cut. Look, I don't want to throw you up on this first reading, but not much is coming through in here. I don't know just how to say it, but it just doesn't gel for some reason or other. Now, let's think about these lines. Well, let's hold it a minute.
What's the matter, George? Who is it, me or Ed?
Well, I hate to throw you up on this first reading, but, Fritz, I think it's you. Something wrong. It's the attack on the part, or maybe you're throwing those lines away without any sincerity. There's no menace in the part. You see what I mean? Well, look, let me come on out.
Hammond again, eh, Fritz? Okay, character. Let it alone. I'm having enough trouble.
Look, he can act. Honest, George. Fella's got a card.
All right, let's can the funny stuff, Ed. We got some work to do, and I want you to just pay attention, if you don't mind.
All right.
Look, Fritz, how do you feel in this thing?
I don't know. It's not right. I don't know what to do, though.
Well, you don't sound convincing. You see my point?
Yeah.
Have you got any ideas on how you might do it?
No. Oh, wait a minute. What about dialect? I could do a little German.
German? Wait a minute. No. I don't think I want any German on this thing. I hear too much of that. Some Austrian? No, that's too close to German.
I don't know.
How's your French? Let's see how your French is.
Oh, it's all right.
No. Look, I don't want to make him too definite. See, he should be a kind of a combination. A lot of menace in there. Quiet, but I got to believe the guy. Make him, let's see, what's that word? I want him to...
Continental.
Yeah, that's it. Just not too much now. Just a whiff of
continental,
okay?
Let me try it, yeah.
All right, we'll try it now from the top, huh?
Let's try it.
Okay. And what will you do if I won't?
Something very unpleasant, my dear chap.
For example?
For example, it is quite possible that I will kill you.
You amaze me.
I assure you, I am quite serious.
Okay, hold it.
How's it doing now? How's it sound?
Are you asking me or the director?
Well, it sounds a lot better than it did before. I think you'll work into it. Yeah, well, look. Fritz, I think that'll do it. What do you say we put it up on the mic and let's see how it sounds? Take that whole scene over.
How is it for age, George?
Oh, the age is okay. I want a little bit of age, not too much age.
All right, just a little,
about right.
Little
right over. Knows the way you have it.
All right.
Rehearsals. Well, it beats digging ditches for a living, I guess.
Oh, does it?
So they tell me.
Well, anyway, it's cool in here. Thank the Lord for air conditioning.
I wish it was 9:30.
Okay, characters, now give me that Afra number 5 now, will you? And let's hear it again from the top.
And what will you do if I won't?
Something very unpleasant, my dear chap.
For example?
For example, it is quite possible I will kill you.
You amaze me.
I assure you, I am quite serious. Possible? Not impossible at all.
May I ask just how you propose to end my life, should I say?
I shall cut your throat. Neatly, and as the books have it, with dispatch.
Oh, you've been reading books, then.
We are wasting time. What's the answer?
The answer is the same as it has always been.
You refuse, then?
I refuse, yes.
Very well. You forced me to become a murderer.
Look, Fritz, you sound about as much like a murderer as... Oh, I give up.
Oh, for the love of Mike, George, what do you want me to do? Growl?
No, I don't want you to growl. But I do want you, if you won't find it too inconvenient, to act just a little bit like a murderer. You know, a murderer, a guy that kills people.
Yeah.
He wants you to make faces, Fritz.
Ah, shut up.
Wait, I'll come out there again.
How you doing, kid?
I give up. I don't know what the man wants.
Now, listen, sweetheart, have you the faintest idea how a guy acts when he's going to kill somebody? Have you?
No, but I got a hunch I'm going to know about it in a minute.
Oh, well, that'll be swell. Because the way you're doing it now, a guy would think that you're Ed's brother or something.
Oh,
now, listen, get it through your thick skull that we got a show in a few minutes. We're going on the air, radio, remember, you see? You're supposed to be a murderer.
I know, but it's going to come a lot easier if you only
give me... Oh, you can't take it, huh?
Oh, nuts.
All right, well, let's try it again. Take it from that line. The answer is the same as it has always been, Ed. Go on,
man. All right. The answer is the same as it has always been.
You refuse... Pardon me. You refuse, then.
Hey, George.
Oh,
now what? Well, what do you want?
There's an old gent out here wants to see you.
What's he want?
I don't know.
Well, tell him to go away. No, wait. Who is he?
I don't know.
How can I keep a character?
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder.
And he says he wants to see Ed, not you.
Who is he?
Won't give his name.
Probably some guy that you owe money to.
You should talk. Well, look, tell him... Well, listen, we're right in the middle of a rehearsal.
Go ahead and talk to him, Ed. We can smoke a cigarette or play tiddlywinks.
No.
But listen, you tell him to make it snappy. We got a show to get on.
All right. Tell him to come in here, Horace.
Go right in.
Well, there you are, Mr. Henley. Good evening, sir. Good evening.
Why,
I don't believe I've ever had...
Don't know me, eh? Well, I know you, Mr. Hedmey. Mr. Ed Hedmey. Yes, sir.
He owes the old guy dough, all right. I'm afraid I don't know
I,
you, sir.
I come up to show you my book. I figured you'd like to have a look at it now while you have the chance, just in case you had any choice. Folks don't often have the choice, you know.
Choice? Choice of what?
Now, here, let me show you the book. I won't be a minute. I don't like to disturb your work, you know, but it's got to be done, I guess. Now, this one here...
Ye gods! Coffins!
What? Coffins?
Look, it's a catalog of coffins.
Caskets.
Huh? Mm,
yes, that's right. Yes, sir, the neatest line of caskets in the country. And nothing but the best. No, sir. Now, looky here, this number, A1436, ain't it? Yes. All gray silk, solid silver handle.
Say, listen, what is this?
Or this model, A5499 in mahogany.
Wait a minute, mister. What's this all about?
Why, I just figured Mr. Henley'd kind of like to pick himself out a casket.
Well, who are you?
So I brought up the book here to show him. I got my tape measure right here in my pocket.
Ah, it's a rib, George. Somebody sent him up here.
Oh, yeah?
No, nobody sent me. I just thought Mr. Henley...
Well, look, Mr. Henley's busy. We're rehearsing a radio show here, and we've got just a few more minutes before we go on the air. So if you don't mind...
I know. You're rehearsing Lights Out. I know all about it. Listen, every Saturday night, I like it. All about ghosts and corpses and things. Yes, sir.
That's fine, but we've got work to do now.
Well, I'll get right out of here. Just as soon as Mr. Henley makes up his mind. Now, this A1436 that I will show you...
Listen, mister, I don't want to buy a coffin. I've got no use for one. Do you get me?
Solid silver handle.
George, this guy's screwed.
Oh, no, sir. Now, wait. I got some pictures here in colors, if you like something a little fancier. And just a minute, how do I find it?
Fritz, yeah. Go get Horace and have him get this old gent out of here. I think the old guy's crazy.
Yeah, okay.
Mister, did somebody send you up here to see Ed Henley?
Send me? No, sir. I told you, I thought it up my own self. Now, this here H6782 with the bronze plate on top. How do you like that? Pretty nifty, ain't it? Hmm? Yes, sir.
Listen, I've told you I don't want a coffin.
You can have it with solid silver plate, if you like that better.
If I were you, Ed, I'd get the one with the silver plate.
Huh? Oh, yes. Yeah, I'd rather like that one with the silver plate. Mm-hmm, that's the one, all right.
H6782A with solid silver plate. Yes, sir. Well, that's all I wanted to know. Yes, sir. That's what I come up here for. Thank you kindly, Mr. Henley. I think you'll find it very satisfactory.
Sure, I will.
And thank you, sir. I'll be going now. Thank you ever so much. Sorry to interrupt you.
Well, goodbye.
Goodbye, gentlemen. Thank you very much, Mr. Henley.
Well, I wonder what goes with that guy.
Whose idea was that?
Hey, oh. Horace.
It's all right, Fritz. He's gone now. Oh, we don't need you, Horace.
Huh? Where'd he go?
Well, he just went out that door a minute ago. Didn't you see him?
No.
Well, he must have went the other way.
He went out that door right there.
Oh, that's funny. We didn't see him.
Listen, Horace, was that your idea?
Mine? Oh, gosh, no.
Hey, I know. It was one of the announcers.
Wise cracking, guys.
Well, I don't think it was so funny myself. Not at this time of night with nobody else in the whole place.
How'd you get rid of him, Ed?
Oh, the old guy was showing us coffin after coffin, and I suggested to Ed that he buy number H6783A.
With solid silver plate.
So, he said okay, and it's grand. Leave it to me to handle the screwy guys. I've had experience enough producing shows around here.
Thank you, dear.
You birds want me anymore?
No, Horace, thanks. If you see old Joe Coffin Seller again, though, tell him we're not in the market. Now, come on, let's get to work.
Yeah, it's about time. Where do we start?
There on page 6, line 5. The answer is the same and so on, you know.
All right. The answer is the same as it has always been.
You refuse, then, eh?
I refuse,
well,
yes.
That's the next time true. Very well, then. You force me to become a murderer.
No, you force me to become a murderer.
You force me to become a murderer.
Go on.
I don't know you.
You know the penalty for murder in this country? Put down that knife.
You have had your last chance.
No, don't kill me.
I warned
don't.
You. I warned
no,
you, but
no.
You would not listen to me.
Cut.
Oh, what?
Now, listen, we got to plant that knife somehow.
Oh, holy smokes, George, I can't say. I am now about to stab you with this here repulsive knife, can I?
Oh, well, that's the trouble with writers. No imagination. You see now.
Well, I could say drop the knife again.
No, no, let me think.
Shut up.
Sorry.
Oh, I got it. Oh, look, why do sound effects guys have to go on vacations? Is there a knife out there someplace?
I don't know. I'll look over here. Let's see. Yeah, here's one.
Well, what kind is it?
Pocket knife. I think I just dropped it in my pocket, too. I've been wanting a knife like this.
Well, let's see it.
I got 10 dibs on it.
Well, now, look. You hold it up close to the microphone and open it. Make it click. And I'll go to the control room and listen.
Very well, Orson. It'll probably sound like a door opening. So what? It's more than the door opening gag we got, sounds like.
All right, let's hear it now. Open it up. No, not so loud. Try it again. Okay, now, Fritz, you put that effect in just as you start to struggle. Give me it.
No, help, that business?
Yes, yes.
No. Hold!
You would not listen to me.
No. Stab him! Oh, yeah, okay.
You better fall down on the floor, Ed. It'll sound better.
Why is it I always have to do the falls?
Go on.
Ah, nuts. Okay.
Now, how are we going to ring that gong? Oh, I don't see why we can't get some help on this show.
Why don't you get Horace?
Well, that's an idea. I'll go get him.
Oh, gosh, I'm tired. I was here at 9 this morning for an audition, and I haven't even had time to get me dinner.
Actors, the idol, Rich.
Says you. Say, who do you suppose sent that dilly old bird up here?
I don't know. A lot of funny jokers around the shop.
That was a good gag for this show, I guess. Except I don't suppose it'll be so funny for the old gent when he finds out it was a gag.
Yeah, I don't imagine it's a very good racket running around peddling coffins.
I never even knew they peddled coffins that way.
Neither did I.
I was reading.
The genius.
You'll have plenty of time to catch up on your reading after the show's over. I want you to sock that gong.
All you got to do is take the little club and clout the gong when George points at you, Horace.
If George points at you, Horace.
Listen, who's producing this show?
I sometimes wonder.
Where's the stick to hit it with?
You are practically standing on it.
Huh? Oh.
All right, now look, I'll go in the control room and you guys go on into the fight. Now, you watch me, Horace, and when I point, you sock that gong.
Okay.
Oh, George, listen, do we have to go through the whole thing again? My throat.
No, just the struggle part. Now, wait till I get in.
Hit it a good bat, Horace.
Okay,
struggle. Well, pay attention, dummy. Will you hit that gong?
Excuse me, I was watching Ed and Fritz.
Well, look, you watch me from now on. I'll give you the cues, and you do them. You got it?
Okay.
Go ahead, struggle.
Okay,
now, you do it just like that on the air. You got it?
Okay. Oh, I gotta go, George. The phone's ringing in the lobby.
Well, hurry up. We're practically on the air.
How are we doing? Oh, I wish I had a cigarette.
No smoking in the studios.
Speak when spoken to. I was talking to Fritz.
Oh, well, there's still no smoking in the studios.
Oh, brother. Want to go get something to eat after the show, Ed?
Oh, not me. I'm gonna be dead.
I'm dragging, too. I'm going sailing with Jake tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Well, you can help it.
Okay, George, I'm back.
Well, look, come on, will you? Come on.
Hey, you know who that was?
Sure, somebody wanting to know what time Fred Waring's on.
No, it wasn't.
Come on, will you? Can the guessing games? Let's go.
It was the old coffin guy. He wanted to know if Mr. Henley wanted a silver or a bronze plate on his coffin.
What'd you tell him?
Silver, I said. Nothing cheap about Mr. Henley, I said.
Listen, you oughtn't to kid the old guy like that. He's just a poor, harmless old bird. Besides, the first thing you know, somebody will be knocking at my door, delivering a coffin and collecting money for it.
Trying to collect, you mean?
Now, listen, you lugs. If you want to play comedy, you put the bite on Don McNeil, will you? You're wasting your time over on this side.
Now, let's go to work. Now, if that old guy calls up again, you tell him to go jump in the lake. Now, come on, look at page 10. We won't have time to take a dress. Top of the page. I want running footsteps, all three of you, across the studio floor, up the stair steps. You stomp and run back down. You got it? On my cue. Okay, hurry up now. Take the knock on the door and the footsteps coming in. It's bottom of page 11. You do the knock, Ed. Horace, you open the door. And Fritz, you do the footsteps. You got it? On my cue. Okay, keep it that way. She's coming right up now. Fritz, you do the wind machine.
Right, right, George.
Ed, you do the chime.
Okay.
Horace, you sock that gong.
Right, George.
On your toes now. At my cue, Fritz. Quiet, everyone. 5 seconds.
Lights out. Everybody. This is the witching hour. It is the hour when dogs howl and evil is let loose on a sleeping world. Want to hear about it? Then turn out your lights.
Good evening, my dear friend.
Good evening, Doctor.
Why don't you come in?
Thank you.
Here, let me take your coat and hat.
Oh, certainly. There you are, Doctor.
Won't you come in and sit down?
Thank you.
Well?
It's all taken care of.
Really?
Quite.
You have the proof?
Well,
of course you realize, my dear friend, I cannot be expected to carry out our little arrangement unless I have proof.
Yes, I was reasonably sure of that.
And so?
There is a hat crumpled in the left-hand pocket of my overcoat.
A hat?
His hat. I think you'll find that it has a bullet hole through the crown and there are several bloodstains.
Oh, fine. You don't mind if I look for myself?
Oh, of course not. That's why I brought it, you see.
Yes, yes, yes. Apparently, a very neat job.
I specialize in neat jobs, Doctor.
Do you mind telling me how it was done?
Not at all. I waited for him in the driveway of his house. Cold, too, tonight. He left his car at the gate and walked up to the house. We had planned on that, you remember?
Yes, 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 yes.
And when he came close enough, I shot him.
Oh, so noisy.
There was a silencer on the revolver.
Thoughtful of you.
I'm always thoughtful, Doctor.
Excellent.
I even stepped close enough to him to ensure powder burn.
That's better.
And the revolver is there without the silencer to make it look like suicide. So?
I congratulate you, my dear friend.
Thank you. I am conscientious.
Are you conscientious enough to remember what I asked you to bring?
Yes, quite.
May I have it?
I think not.
What you say?
I came here tonight merely to thank you, Doctor, for your cooperation. I find myself a richer man.
I hope you are joking, my friend.
Not at all.
You don't want to give up the packet of jewels?
I couldn't have put it more neatly myself, Doctor.
I see. You have not forgotten that I paid you a sum of money to perform this service for me?
$500.
That is correct.
That is why I came here.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
To return the $500. You see, Doctor, I have decided to keep the jewels instead.
I see. Would you care for a drink?
Brandy, perhaps.
If you like. Water?
No, thank you, no.
Your health.
If you don't mind, Doctor,
Let us exchange glances.
You are a remarkably suspicious man.
I have to be. If you please.
Oh, quite.
I thought so, Doctor.
Well, your good health. And now I'll be going, if you don't mind.
Oh, must you go, really?
Yes. Here are your $500.
My offer is still good.
Your offer?
$500 for eliminating this man and bringing me the jewels from his pocket.
Oh. I'm sorry not to be able to accept your offer, Doctor. I've made other arrangements, you see.
May I point out that you left your revolver at our friend's side?
May I point out that it is extremely possible that I have another.
Possible?
Probable.
Shall we have another drink?
May I pour?
If you like. Enough. Thank you. Now, shall we discuss this further?
I'm afraid there is very little to discuss, Doctor.
If you do not mind,
no,
I would...
No, there is nothing to discuss. I am grateful to you, my dear Doctor, for putting me in the way of earning the very comfortable sum that these jewels will bring. I'm equally grateful to you for your hospitality. But I really must go.
Oh, I beg of you. Let me point out that a gentleman of your reputation might have some difficulty in disposing of the jewels.
There are ways.
Would it not be a great deal safer for you to take the $500 with no further risk than to keep the jewels and run the risk of hanging?
I'll take the risk. Besides, if anything unpleasant does happen to me in the course of disposing of the jewels, I can always remind my captors of the part that you played in this little affair. You see?
I'm afraid you would have a very difficult time proving that.
Perhaps. But I'll run the risk.
Good night. Don't hurry, I beg of you. I should dislike to have any unpleasant happening.
You forget that I have a revolver, Doctor.
That is a lie.
I wouldn't take a chance if I were you, Doctor.
I'm not taking a chance. I know you have no revolver.
Really?
Really.
Interesting. How?
A very simple process of deduction. There is none in your overcoat. I could tell by the weight of it.
Huh, but there is.
Ah, thank you. I was rather certain that it was there.
You...
And so I took the liberty of locking your overcoat in the closet when I got up to inspect our friend's hats. Checkmate, my dear friend.
Stalemate, I think. I still have the jewels.
And I warn you for the last time to give them to me.
I'm sorry.
It would be a great deal better for you if you would, you know.
What will you do if I won't?
Something very unpleasant, my dear friend.
For example?
It is quite possible I will kill you.
You amaze me.
I assure you, I am quite serious.
Impossible.
It is not impossible at all.
May I ask just how you propose to, end my life, shall I say?
I shall cut your throats, neatly and as the books have it. With dispatch.
You've been reading books, then.
Come, we are wasting time. What's the answer?
The answer is the same as it has always been.
You refuse, then?
I refuse, yes.
Very well. You force me to become a murderer.
You know the penalty for murder in this country, Doctor. Put down that knife.
You have had your last chance.
No. No, don't kill me.
I warned you. I warned you.
No, no.
You would not listen to me. Ed. Ed.
You.
Ed.
You stabbed me, Fritz.
Oh, my God.
Horace, look. The knife slipped. I didn't mean... I cut him. I didn't mean to cut him. I cut him.
Blood. You've really killed him, Fritz.
Oh, no. No, I...
Fritz, I just got here in time, didn't I? Yes, sir. Model 8 6782 with silver plate for Mr. Henley.
No!
Yes, sir. Just bring it right in, boys. Mr. Henley's all ready for it.
Thank you.
have just heard The Coffin in Studio B, the second in the summer revival series of Lights Out. In tonight's cast, you heard Bob Murphy as Ed, Sherman Marks as Fritz, Don Gallagher as George, Jack Bivens as Horace, and Charles Eggleston as the coffin salesman.
All right. You can turn them on now.
That was The Coffin in Studio B from Lights Out, here on the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
This is a great intro to get that background on that and find out that that was a sort of a recreation of a classic Willis Cooper script. It was interesting to find out that that was done so long before, because it seems to start poking at yourself and making meta references to yourself. You would have to be on the air for a long time. So Cooper did this out of the gate, started meta referencing.
Making fun of radio conventions as they're being created.
Right. When did this one air? Did we say it?
This production was from 46, but the script would have first been produced and is lost somewhere between 34 and 36.
Right. So it makes it even more fascinating how they're not only meta poking fun at themselves, but radio in general is so out of the gate. I would have just assumed this was a later episode of Lights Out where Obler went, hey, it's time to do some Obler stuff and and peek behind the curtain and do some weird things.
Cooper had already established that.
So that's interesting.
As something to do on Lights Out.
Yeah. So why did you visit this one, sir?
This is one I have heard many times over my entire career as an old-time radio listener. first heard it, in middle school from a library record. And it's always been one of my favorites, but as this podcast continued long past when I thought it would die, I quickly realized I need to set some of my old favorites aside or we will crank through them. So this has just been on my list for literally years to bring to the podcast. And I will give the game away and say I thoroughly enjoy it. It's a little difficult for me because I've heard it so many times. I don't know that I can actually recollect my initial responses upon hearing it. But I do recall being so delighted on so many levels when the director broke in. Mostly because it made me realize the tropey, over-the-top scene I had just heard was intentionally tropey and over-the-top and not what I was in for most of the episode. Right. And then I have this other joy of realizing, oh, no, wait, he's going to make me listen to most of this tropey, ridiculous radio show. But because of what he's put in front of it, it's now strangely tense and surreal, but I'm not sure why, because I just know something bad has to happen.
It's a mixture of this meta behind the scenes thing, but the element of horror is kind of a Shaggy Dog joke with the coffin salesman. Hey, I gotta go. Okay, I'm back. I mean, it's musical, and it introduces his themes, and then it breaks them apart, and then resynthesizes them, and it's so full, and you get every little piece in a way you wouldn't have gotten if you just heard it from the beginning.
I was taken by how their rehearsal process for a radio show goes, because we don't spend nearly that much time on our craft. Boy, they were particular and try that again. Do that different.
But I thought there was a lot that's relatable about it, in that the mundane banter between actors during their downtime, the strange alliances between cast members that shift and change during the rehearsal process.
Right.
What reminded me the most of our old-time radio preparations is the trying to figure out the sound effects.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's like, is this pocket knife opening going to actually sound like a pocket knife opening, or will it weirdly sound like something else, like a door?
Right.
I know that was a joke, but sometimes the thing doing the thing it's supposed to do does not sound like
that's exactly right. I also found it interesting that the actors, the Foley guy wasn't there, so the actors were doing their own Foley.
Figuring it out for rehearsal and just...
Remind me of us.
Yeah.
Because we do our own Foley. And so there was that moment of, all right, so who's going to hit the gong?
Yeah.
Who's going to do the knife? Who's going to do the running? And that's we do that in our queue to queue trying to figure out our shows. So that was the part that was relatable.
I couldn't tell if there was a little bit of poking fun at either a director who can't really properly give a note of like, just, you know, sound menacing. Not that, not that, not that, but just sound better. Or if they're making fun of an actor who would just, could you just act? Could you just...
Right.
Put some character in the words that are on the page.
I believe it's the latter. I found myself relating to the actors. I've been in that situation, especially in voiceovers, where I'm just getting direction. And I've learned in my old age, you go, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. And do the same thing I just did and watch them go, ooh, nice. And I'm like, you're idiots. You're just saying stuff to say stuff. It sounded to me like it was a director qualifying their existence or being frustrated over something that they couldn't quite explain, because to me, that actor kept doing the same thing over and over again.
I thought that was part of the satire. I thought it was clearly this is a guy just writing straight from his experiences, Willis Cooper here. And
right.
I felt that he was making fun of both.
Right.
And also making fun of himself. Yeah. I love the director at first trying to sugarcoat it and finally getting to the point like, act like a murderer.
Right.
And like, I don't know, maybe an accent, or just a whiff of continental, and just all that little tiny trying to make it this small nuanced thing, nothing personal. And then I also enjoyed, as I said earlier, the shifting alliances, in that you have that opening scene where Ed, I think, is the actor who's not getting picked on, and it's Fritz who's getting all the notes, and Ed's just making wisecracks. And then when the coffin salesman comes in, Fritz and the director create an alliance and keep making cracks and jokes on Ed.
Right.
And he's the source of it. And it just has this nice shifting dynamic. And it's subtle, but it makes it fun to listen to. If you realize this is a professional relationship here. This isn't a story about some backstory between the actors, and one of them's going to kill them because he's dating their girl or he's ruined all your radio shows. It seemed very mundane and natural. Mm-hmm. Which made the intrusion of the surreal in the form of the coffin salesman all the more disorienting.
Interesting take on the angel of death appearing, mm-hmm. knowing someone's about to go, and having them appear as a coffin salesman is unique.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, this is the story, right? And then they shuffle them off, and then the last third is just this radio drama.
Yeah.
And to me, it has the dramatic effect of the too long pause in comedy, where at first I'm like, oh, they're backing up. Cool. We'll hear more of this radio show. And then I'm like, this is a lot of radio show. and then it keeps going. And then you go like, okay, I'm starting to get a little nervous here. Like, it's been going too long. Like, what's happening? And so the tension comes back around after losing patience. Just like in a long pause, mm-hmm. the laughs come back.
Right.
After losing patience, because it finally pays off again.
Right.
So on the one hand, I found the coffin salesman to be this surreal intrusion into this world. But I think the tension for me is that as a performer, there's also some anxiety and nightmare response to just Fritz's predicament at the top. My anxiety dreams as an actor take the form of like the show goes wrong type of thing.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, it's always like, hey, I got on stage and forgot to write a show.
Right.
Something just ridiculous. It's the performance equivalent of realizing you're giving a speech and you forgot to put on clothes.
Right. Mine are all going on stage and realizing I'm in Shakespeare production. All of them. And just going, you can't even improvise through this.
I may have shared this before, but my favorite acting anxiety dream was in some kind of sketch comedy show where I had to, like, okay, I'm in the next bit, and I'm dressed as a Canadian Mountie, and I go through the wrong door, and I'm suddenly locked out in the alley. Like, oh, no! And so I go around to the front of the theater, to the box office, and they say, like, if you don't have a ticket, sir, I'm dressed as a Canadian Mountie. I'm in the show.
That would happen at the old... Brave New Workshop space.
That might be related.
The guy just points to a sign that says no Canadians.
And then, as long as we're off topic real quick, I actually lived the actor nightmare where I got cast in a thing, and I thought I was doing it in a Russian accent, and I got to the set, and it turns out, no, it's in Russian. I had 3 days to memorize 4 pages of script in Russian. And I panicked, and then I looked at him and said, are there people that can do this? And I thought I was going to get fired, and the director looked at me, paused, and said, you know what? Probably not. Let's just make this a Russian accent. Thank you. Thank you. But, oh, my God, I was just panicking.
I felt like maybe that the low-budget aspects of this was Cooper laughing at his late-night horror show that probably doesn't have a lot of money thrown at it. The whole idea of, I don't have a sound man, I got to bring the desk guy in to hit the gong.
Right.
Because it felt like he'd done it before. It felt so real because they did the run-through and the guy missed his cue. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I was watching Fritz and Ed. Yeah. Like, it's like that felt so real.
Yep.
And I heard this for the first time when I was very young. So now this kind of self-referential meta stuff is really mainstream. But it blew my mind as a young man to be like, oh, it's the Lights Out show and they're recording it.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I have to think that in 1930, whatever, listeners had the same response.
Sure. Even in 1946 in the repeat, I think they probably had that same response of interesting meta take.
And we have the dig at Orson. Because at one point, one of the actors, whatever you say, Orson to the director.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It's, I think, a credit to Cooper that he can indulge in all the fun. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to break some ground here. I'm going to treat myself to as much fun and poking fun at myself, at the show, and all that, and couch it in a show that still has a punch. And
that has a piece of horror or suspense or murder.
You can validate this excuse.
Well, I guess that leads to my kind of million-dollar question on this.
I hope it pays that.
I can't remember my initial response to this.
Sure.
So do you feel the end was telegraphed? Did you think he was going to get stabbed with the knife?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I knew that was coming, especially when they went through the knife thing and said, well, that's how he dies. I knew the coffin salesman was there because someone was going to die and they were going to get killed and they were picking out the... I knew what the premise was and quickly caught on to that game. I would say that entire thing of the recreation of the radio show for me was like, wow, they're going to do the whole show. They just keep going. When I finally started to hear words that I remembered from the beginning in the rehearsal, I'm like, oh, good, we're getting close to to what's going to happen, how they die, and then he stabs him. And I knew it would come in that fight scene. So nothing was surprising to me. I don't think my appeal is a general public's appeal. That is, it was fun to listen to actors rehearsing old-time radio shows and the director and all. You know, it was more to give it that angle.
It's due. All that effort to make it really realistic, really believable and credible makes the sort of what might otherwise be a mundane kind of ridiculous and disappointing. Like, oh, they got in a little fight and actually stabbed him. You are more invested in these characters because they are so real, because they are like, that's me.
The writing of this and the performance of this is that realism instead of line, they're overlapping each other. There's all right, so let's just do that again. Like, it sounded like someone had dropped a microphone into a rehearsal space. So I thought from that standpoint.
So you believe a real person just got stabbed.
Yes, and you believe that guy came, and I like how they make fun of him. Jesus, send that guy. What did he do? Oh, he told me bye when it was the pattern of it. The form of this was extremely real, which helped sell it.
The conversational tone of acting was not the industry standard at that point.
Mm-hmm. On stage or radio or anywhere.
What I find impressive about it is, I agree with everything you guys just said, but also to go back to what I was saying earlier about the commitment to going through a big chunk of the radio show, because even though it's telegraphed, and I've listened to a lot, so even when I listen to it again after not listening to it for a long time and know it's going to happen, I get uncomfortable during that time. And it might be back to what you guys are saying of, like, they seem like real people. And it's that idea, like, it's taking so long to get to the point of inevitable action that you feel like there's got to be something to change the end.
Right.
It's long enough for you guys to realize what's about to happen, but of course it's not. And so maybe that's where the tension comes from. Or
can I say that's my disappointment in it?
Yeah.
I was waiting to be not given that ending. It was so, this is what's going to happen, that I went, oh, that's exactly what happened. Okay. Then I had to go back and go, okay, on its merits, stop judging it from what you thought it was going to be and what was it. But you, I was waiting.
Someone has to die. It's Chekhov's coffin. You bring a coffin salesman in there. Like that coffin has to be put to use.
Absolutely.
But you just wanted to be surprised. I don't know what it was used.
I didn't rewrite it, so I don't have an answer to that. But like, I don't know. Batman shows up. I don't know.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
It would be like early 30s Batman, so he'd shoot everybody.
I mean, depending on when in 30, like this is almost certainly well before Batman.
Oh, you're right.
Right. Batman like,
39.
Oh, wow. 39. For some reason, I thought Superman's he was earlier. Yeah, because he was inspired by the Shadow. So I'm thinking the Shadows era.
Yeah. Should be Shadow started. Pulp's 29, something like that.
Yeah, somewhere around there, or yep. 30.
Yeah, yep.
Very early.
Nerds.
Well, should we vote on this?
Yeah, we can vote. Tim, you haven't started for a while.
I will call this a classic. I think there's so many. I mean, it's weird to say. It's so groundbreaking, but it's just as the ground was being made, let alone broken. It's a remarkable piece of writing. For the investment he makes at the beginning, whether it pays off in the end might be up for debate. I think it does, but I think there's arguments to the contrary. All that being said, remarkable, remarkable piece of work, especially for the 30s. It's a classic.
I agree with a lot of things you just said, but you open the door for where I'm going with this. I don't think the payoff is worth the wait. It's fine. It's good. It's really well done. I will say this, last week we had a very Eric episode. This week we have a very Joshua episode. As I was listening to it, I realized the joy you especially would take in this, and you Tim, to some extent. But I knew, I was like, oh, this is, I get why this has been brought by him and how much he loves it. I just guess when it was over, I went, yep. So for me, not a classic, not even the best Lights Out I've ever heard, but I certainly enjoyed it a lot and stands the test of time and historically significant for a lot of reasons.
I just really, really like it. And I totally get why someone wouldn't. And it might be part of why I like it so much is because I feel like I shouldn't like it as much. And somehow he makes it work. Like
right.
The fact that it's all telegraphed somehow adds to the tension to me, and I'm not exactly sure how he did. I made some theories early in the podcast, but I don't know why or how it works, but I just think it's a surreal, funny, strangely tense, and a self-reflective examination of the medium, yet it's still packaged as just a light little horror story. But I think it's that self-reflective nature that makes it so appealing. It's like M.C. Escher listening to himself sure. on the radio, listening to himself on the radio, listening to himself right. on the radio.
Or you could make the argument, oh, that's lazy.
There's like, oh, actually recorded rehearsal. Oh, no.
You could have, but the authenticating detail is just...
I don't like, think
even
that.
If it took him 5 minutes to write, it's because he put so much work into the art of radio that he could write it in 5 minutes.
Sure.
So he earned it, even if it is the laziest script ever. So classic for me.
Tim, tell him stuff.
Hey, please go visit ghoulishdelights.com if you have a chance. You can leave comments on these episodes. Let us know what you think. You can vote in polls if you'd like to just give a quick, brief response as to what your opinion is. You can also send us messages. You can visit our store and buy some swag. And you'll find a link to our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and support this podcast. Help us do more podcasts and more live radio shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. We really appreciate all those who do support us because it really makes this podcast possible.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We, in exchange for you making this possible,
we buy groceries.
We buy groceries. And on Patreon, we try to make things fun for you. We've got bonus podcasts. We've got happy hours. We hang out. You can get on Discord and chat with fellow old-time radio, Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society fans. You can do all the things. Just give us a little bit of money, please.
If you'd like to see us performing live, the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Theater Company does live audio drama on stage monthly. You can find out where we're performing, what we're performing, and how to get tickets by going to ghoulishdelights.com. We do recreations of classic old-time radio live on stage, along with a lot of our own original work. We perform somewhere, sometimes more than once a month. If you can't make it, you're not in that area or whatever, you're busy that day. If you're a Patreon, we film where you can, that's part of your Patreon package to see that. Or sometimes it's just the audio recording, depending
Don't say just. This is an old-time radio
right,
podcast.
Right. It's
even better.
Even better.
It's an audio
recording. It's an audio recording. Sorry.
You don't have to see our faces.
Even better. We have faces for radio.
He's going to yell at me when we're off the air.
It's not funny when we're off. I'm yelling at you now. Do better.
What's coming up next?
Next, we are going to do a companion radio show to this one. Eric, interestingly enough, earlier in this podcast said, well, look, I didn't try to rewrite this or anything. Well, it turns out that Willis Cooper later rewrote this episode to a degree, and we'll be listening to that. A Night to Forget from Quiet Please. Until then.
Look out!
Look, Fitz, how do you feel in this thing?
I don't know. It's not right. I don't know what to do, though.
Could you just act? Could you just
right.
put some character in the words that are on the page?